Hello and welcome to the Open Source Security Podcast with myself, Kurt Seyfried, and my partner in looking at top X lists, Josh Bressers.
All right. I'm just going to start it out by saying most of these security top 10, top 25, top whatever lists, I detest them.
I'm going to interrupt. I love that it's never like top 17. It's some arbitrary number and then they shoehorn it in, which in my brain, if you actually are building a top X list, you find all the top things, find a cutoff, and that's whatever you end up with is whatever you end up with.
But we're monkeys with 10 fingers, Kurt. That's why everything is in fives and tens.
Then where does the 25 come from?
25 is a five-base number. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25.
Yeah.
Like one hand has five fingers, so things with five at the end make me happy.
Yeah.
This is why, like, we have a podcast episode 500 is coming at some point soon, and people are like, oh, what do you think about 500? I'm like, don't even care. I'm a monkey with 10 fingers, don't care. Now, episode 512, now we're talking. That one's got some meat on the bones.
And my favorite thing, too, is all those currencies that have 20-cent coins instead of 25-cent coins.
I go back and forth always whether I like or dislike that. But yes, I don't know. I get it. Like, I get it. There is utility in both.
Well, like a 17-cent coin would be annoying as hell.
I disagree. I would love a 17-cent coin because it would be obnoxious.
You can't arithmetic. Okay, what's 3 times 17?
I don't care. It doesn't matter. Just the hilarity of having a 17-cent coin.
Oh my god, yeah. Making change.
That is what I want. And so actually, fun fact, I'll try to dig these up and put a link in the show notes. But for Christmas, I think last year, my daughter plays a lot of D&D. And I bought her like ridiculous dice. Like there's a 3-sided die and a 7-sided die. I think there's a 5-sided die.
How do you get a 3-sided die? Is it curved?
It's a strange like Y kind of shape, like a rounded Y looking thing. And the dice are all bananas, obviously, as you'd expect. And they're ridiculous.
Oh, okay. So it is curved as I suspected. Okay. So they're cheating.
Everything is cheating. And the people who made the dice claim they've been tested for...
Fairness?
Fairness, that's the word.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even care. They're just cool dice. Like,
my favorite thing is like that guy, you know, that guy that made that dice rolling machine where it's just like a kind of a conveyor belt and the dice fall down the chute and like the dice wear out. And yeah, I mean, and then he had the camera hooked up to it to, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right, right. Anyway, okay, top 25 list. The real reason we're talking today is MITRE put out a top 25 CWEs of 2024. Yes. And I saw this, and apart from the just immediate revulsion of a top X list, as I'll explain why I hate them all momentarily, but I looked at this and I thought, I have all of this data because I meticulously catalog and poke at the CVE data, both the CVE data coming from NVD and the CVE data coming from CVE5.
Okay, just pause for a sec. The CVE or CWE?
It's all the same. The CWE data is inside of the CVE data.
Okay, and just for our listeners, what is the difference between the two data sets?
Well, so CVE is common vulnerabilities and exposures, right? These are like the identifier. CVE-2024-blah, okay?
Yeah.
Then CWE is a way of just categorizing security vulnerabilities.
Common weakness enumeration.
Okay, sure. I forgot that.
Yeah, it's a, for example, what is a buffer overflow versus a buffer underflow? Because they're actually different. Right. Or my all-time favorite, memory leak. Everybody uses memory leak wrong.
Yeah, I know.
It's actually where your memory steadily decreases because you're not freeing it, not because you're exposing it to the world, which is what everybody keeps using it for.
So I want to start by just saying why I have revulsion towards top X lists, because there's like the OWASP top 10, there's the CWE top 25, there's lots of top lists you see. There's at the end of the year, people are going to have the top 10 vulnerabilities of 2025 or 2024 or whatever. And here is my complaint. The OWASP top 10 list, this CWE top 25 list, they capture attention from people. But what is the point? There is no step two in these lists. And that is why I hate them. Because if I had an audience for a list like this, it is an opportunity to start a discussion about how we actually get rid of some of this stuff. Like if OWASP actually wanted to take their list seriously and do the right thing. Now, mind you, I am an OWASP member and I criticize them all the time. But OWASP top 10, what they should have done is said, we're going to pick one of the things on this list and we're going to eliminate it from security problems forever. How many things have ever been eliminated from the OWASP top 10 versus just fell off the list because something else took its place?
Well, so one thing to be clear, each CWE, or at least the mature CWEs, have a potential mitigation section. In the case of the XSS one, it's quite long. To your point, I think there's an interesting thought is, what if instead of the top 10 vulnerabilities or weaknesses list, the OWASP kind of flipped it on its head and had the top 10 solutions, like the top 10 effective things to do to actually make problems go away more better?
I would find that list less revolting, I think. Yes.
Like I'm going to shoehorn this in here. Like Google recently did that C safety thing, which we'll talk about, but too long didn't read. They basically modified C so it's more memory safe and it's got right. about a 3% performance hit, which is not bad, not great.
Right.
But apparently the results security wise that they're getting are massive.
Yeah, I haven't read this yet. I saw the title. I can't wait to read it.
Well, and it basically goes back to your argument with a lot of these vulnerabilities, which is that the solution is framework, like use a framework. And this drives me nuts because the other thing is if you look at the CWE top 25 listed, so they have XSS at the top, which by number is probably the most prevalent one because like it's.
No, I want to talk about this. There's a reason for this, which I sent you a link to and you clearly did not read. So on Mastodon. This list was pointed out and someone was like, why is cross-site scripting number one? That seems nuts. But here's the thing. What are the four largest CNAs?
WordFence.
Yes.
The other WordPress one and the other WordPress one.
I think GitHub IP and Linux kernel.
Well.
But basically, the vast majority of CVEs filed in 2024, the growth we're seeing is coming from WordPress plugin bug bounty programs.
Yeah.
What is the most common security vulnerability you're going to see in a WordPress plugin?
Well, in any web thing is XSS.
It's cross-site scripting, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's the thing. Now, granted, even if we take those out of the data, which we can talk about, because I have the data, I can monkey with it, and we can do some fun things with this. But even if we take the WordPress stuff out, cross-site scripting is still at the top of the list. It's just not nearly as pronounced as it is with the WordPress plugin CNAs on that list, which I find a lot of people are shocked cross-site scripting is at the top, but it totally doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, it's also there's a bit of survivor bias here in that cross-site scripting is also like one of the easiest vulnerabilities to find and prove.
That's
like it is. It's like literally falling downstairs. It's that easy. There's a well-known set of strings you just cut and paste into fields and see if a JavaScript alert pops up.
That's right. And this was, so I remember I ran a bug bounty at Elastic when I was there. And cross-site scripting was far and away the largest thing we got reports on. Now, granted, we were glad to get them because we wanted to fix them all anyway. There's also good tooling that helps discover these things because there are things like Burp Suite and there's Zap. And basically, these are proxies that sit between the web browser and the server, and it lets you just like inject random garbage into the data automatically.
It's not random garbage. It's actually structured garbage. It's like intelligent fuzzing, which makes it...
whatever. You know what I mean. Don't get overly pedantic.
No, but this is an important difference because like we're at a point where you can look at input and output from a web app to the client and... these suites are mature enough now to be able to kind of really understand what's going on and fuss with the right bits very quickly. And again, it's like it's the easiest one to find. We have now 25 years of cross-site scripting. Like the tools are mature. The understanding is mature. And the fact that what drives me nuts is like a great example. Like I just wrote that WordPress plugin. One of the security checks obviously is like that you're sanitizing your output. And the funny thing is I have one warning because I send XML output for the RSS feed. And so I can't sanitize it. Like I can't escape it because then you get not an XML file, right? You get an escaped weird HTML XSS mess. But everything else where I, spit out an error or whatever to the user in the web page, it's escaped. And like WordPress has ESC_HTML, like it has a full set.
Yeah, but no one's using it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. It's well known. It's well documented. It's been there for over a decade. And yet the WordPress plugins are not using it.
Well, because they're all too old. No, you sent me a message that until this year, that scanner wasn't mandatory for WordPress plugins. The one we talked about a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, it turns out that WordPress plugin check is now it's mandatory that it runs, and I guess reasonably cleanly, as of, I think it was October 1st of 2024 for newly submitted plugins. And the thing is, like, once you submit your plugin, you literally get an email saying, we will never check your plugin again unless we get, like, complaints or something, like, really off the rails, like, is noticed or happens.
Right.
In which case, we'll review it and, like, so, I mean, I assume if somebody, like, were to put a backdoor in and somebody complained about it, they would put it back in the review list.
Sure. And I mean, they should scan them all the time. But anyway,
yeah.
Okay. But here's why I really thought that we should talk about the data, right? So there's the fact that the CNAs for the WordPress plugins are accounting for an enormous amount of growth, obviously, which makes kind of this a big deal.
And what's lovely is they're one of the few people that actually want more CVEs because they want to be able to show, hey, we're protecting your WordPress install from, well, all these.
Right. They're gamifying the system, essentially, is what's happening.
And WordPress plugins update automatically without any hassle. So it's also one of the few situations where, as a, well, compared to like upgrading a Linux kernel or upgrading an operating system, it's a lot cleaner.
Okay. I don't want to just talk about WordPress, though.
It's having a ton of CVEs for something that automatically updates. Yeah, who cares? It's fine.
No, I'm all for more CVEs. I think every security vulnerability, no matter how big or small, should be assigned a CVE. That way we can use it for doing data mining and understanding what's happening in environments. And there's lots of reasons to do that, right?
Yep.
I'm not saying it's bad that they're getting lots of CVEs. They're definitely using it in a unique and interesting way. They have an incentive to get as many CVEs as possible, which I think skews kind of the system a little bit, as we see in this list.
Well, they're also easy to get.
Well, they're a CNA. They can assign as many as they want.
No, but I mean, the cross-site scripting CVEs are easy to get because they're easy to show. They're easy to prove.
You just talked about that. You don't get to talk about it again. Okay, but here's the thing. Let's say, now, we've also complained about CVSS at length, but let's say we take this data and we say only CVSS scores above 7, right? Which is saying we're going to increase...
Yeah, isn't cross-site scripting 6.9?
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I think it's 6.9.
Well, there's some that are 7 and above. It just depends, right? It depends how it's used, what's going on. And NVD does a terrible job of categorizing these things, whatever. But here's the thing. If I say, show, like, give me the CWEs for greater than 7, what is the cross-site scripting one again? 79. So 79 basically drops off this list. It's now way down, becomes number 12 instead of number 1. But here's the thing. So we end up with 787 at the top of the list, which is out of bounds right. That feels correct to me. Like, out of bounds rights, those are bad.
That typically results in code execution.
Generally, I mean, or if at least a denial of service, right? But often code execution is the goal that you have with those.
Yeah.
And so anyway, here's the other thing that I've been thinking about with this data is, so like, MITRE makes a list, and I know they did a bunch of categorizing. Like, when I look at the numbers I get versus numbers they have, there's a little, some things are flipped around here and there, but generally speaking, the lists line up. But once you start applying some of these other, I guess, dimensions to the data, I think it can get way more interesting than it did before, because the reality is, like, just saying, here's the top 25 CWEs we see in the data, like, that is not something I can use. But when we start, I think, saying, like, what if we look at the CVSS score? What if we change it to look at only the high CVSS scores? I mean, what if we look at the scores below 7? What happens then?
You know, what's interesting is they actually, in their top 25 list, say CVEs in the KEV, the known exploited vulnerabilities catalog from CISA, and XSS is 3, and then the second place runner-up, which is the out-of-bounds right, is at 18. And I'm like, how did XSS win this year?
Well, because it just has the most, because the WordPress plugin bug bounties are just fine. So, like, Kurt,
this is like the year Larry Cash Dollar went.
Basically, yes, except they're doing it every day.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. When anyone who is a CVE analyst and you're going through the data and you're, like, logging this stuff and putting it somewhere, it is an enormous amount of WordPress stuff every single day. Like, I'm not kidding when I say Larry Cash Dollar every day. That's what this is. At work, we do this every day. I don't do it every day. Like, we have some other people that do it. I do it every now and then. And every time, it's just tons of WordPress stuff, tons of it. Now, here's the interesting thing. Let's say I look at the CWE list for everything less than 7, right?
Yeah.
We end up with CWE 125, which is an out-of-bounds read.
Yeah.
And it's not, it is ridiculously higher than everything else. And that number 2 is 121, but we're talking like 10, like, I think it's 5 times.
And like I said, part of the bias is also there's 59,000 free WordPress plugins in the index, and you can literally just download them all and check them for XSS very efficiently and automatically. And I think that's another aspect of this is, like, this finding XSS is heavily automated.
Yeah.
So it's just, again, it's back to kind of survivor bias. Like, why are there so many XSS? Well, because, like, I'm looking for my keys under the streetlight. Except there's a whole bunch of keys under the streetlight in this case.
Well, and I can get paid to do this. I mean, so look,
yeah.
I know a bunch of bug bounty people. And bug bounty people are incredibly clever humans. And there are a lot of them that have created tons of automation that will, some of them go and they scour websites looking for certain known things. Some of them scour source code and they look for things. And this is an example of these bug bounty programs that, you know, WordFence and WP Scan and all this.
Yeah.
There are almost certainly people making a living just finding things in WordPress plugins and submitting them as bugs to this bug bounty. I guarantee it.
No, I did the math, and it's, you can, with automation, you can actually make a decent living at this, because I actually considered a career switch at one point.
It's definitely a lot of work.
Well, and that's why we have IT and automation, right? Like, isn't that the whole point of IT, is to automate?
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Like, the thing that really frustrates me is that there are good frameworks that, and it's not even that there's good frameworks. There's people using the good frameworks like WordPress, and they're not using the capabilities it provides.
Yeah, that's always going to happen, though.
Right. But I mean, if we can't get people using a framework to, like, air quotes, use it properly, how the heck do you get somebody writing it from scratch to do it correctly? Like, I remember somebody talking to me 20 years ago, and he said, and I quote, "What are you going to do when all the security bugs get fixed?" And I looked at him and I was like, like, we're writing a lot more code that's bad a lot faster than we're fixing it. And, like, people aren't learning how to write code better. Great example, the AI used some functions that are going to be deprecated. And so I actually looked up the list of PHP functions that are being deprecated. There's over, like, 100 of them. And again, like, hands up, how many people in our audience are PHP programmers and don't check that list every month? All of them. Basically.
Probably. Right?
Maybe a handful.
I mean, when are they getting deprecated, though? Is this one of those, like, maybe someday we'll almost sort of deprecate the thing?
It's on a schedule. It's coming. It's coming, okay. Like, in a month or a year. It's in version 8.5 or whatever. It's for sure. It's planned, right? Like, it's going to happen. And the point is, like, there's so much of this stuff, though. And humans, like, they got to make the software work and go to, and pick their kids from school.
And I think that is the definition of this list. Let's just look at the list quick, because I know we've obsessed over, like, PHP and WordPress, even though I know they are a huge part of this story. But, like, all right, number two, out of bounds, right? Memory safety, right? That's what that is.
Yeah.
We've been complaining about memory safety for literally decades.
Yeah.
SQL injection is number three.
Yeah.
SQL injection is another one of those. Use a frickin' framework.
Well, it's just, it's a slight variation on the input validation that is XSS, SQL injection, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now you've got cross-site request forgery. I would say that's similar to XSS and the use a framework story.
It's the same thing.
Basically, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then now, improper limitation of a path name, which is again.
Hey, you don't get to jump in front of me. I'm reading the list.
Okay.
Number five, improper limitation of a path name, path traversal, right?
The same thing.
I would say this is very similar to SQL injection, where I am constructing a string.
Yeah.
On my own, not paying attention to the nuance of the. In fact, this is just like the D-link thing we talked about, right? Where there was the one binary had the safe execute calling another binary that doesn't have safe execute. It's like, whoops.
I think what's frustrating to me is these are solved input validation issues. Like, this is not some theoretical, like, could we fix this? It's like, no, to do SQL injection, there are known 100% effective ways to solve it. Same with XSS, same with CSRF.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing that gets me, is if we can't solve the ones that we actually have a solution for,
that's true,
the
actually. Ones
that are harder, like memory safety in C, I think we're all agreed at this point that no amount of, like, Google doing safe stuff and add-ons and stuff, memory safety in C will never be a thing.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. 100%.
Like,
I mean, all right, number six, out of bound read. I mean, we just kind of talked about that a little bit.
Yeah. Memory safety.
Yeah. We've got seven is OS command injection, which is literally the D-link thing.
Well, and again, the solved input validation thing. Like, we know which characters and how to escape them and how, like, there are known safe ways to generate a string that you then pass to a command line.
It's definitely not as obvious as using a framework, I don't think. I think this is...
There are frameworks that do this.
There are some, but I think this one is a less strong answer, I feel like. It's more squishy.
Well, it's also, in my mind, if you're passing stuff to the command line, you're kind of doing it wrong. Like, you should be using APIs and libraries. And,
at this point,
you're just hacking it together, which, hey, I literally have in production a PHP API call that fires off an SSH command and runs a Docker command.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's, like, super locked down and, you know, whatever.
Okay. All right, number eight. Use after free.
So memory safety.
Memory safety. There we go.
Okay. Number nine is finally getting somewhat interesting.
Cart, stop. I'm reading the list. I
didn't say what it was.
I'm reading the list. Missing authorization.
Yeah.
Number nine.
Yeah. I forgot to lock the front door.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. It actually happened like 4 days ago.
People make mistakes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, in number nine is, I think, the first example on the list we've gotten to. This is where, like, having a bug bounty and penetration testing and doing a bunch of, we'll say, like, security stuff, I feel like could have a positive effect. I don't think you'll ever get rid of it because humans make mistakes.
Here's like, a random, just
mistakes, right?
Here's a random thought, but I'm seeing increasingly sites requiring authentication, even for free stuff like downloading a web paper. Right. Or downloading a paper via the web, you know, where they want your email address and then they send you the link to their email address.
I know.
And part of me, like, we're seeing more and more authorization as a sales tactic, not as a security tactic, because forcing you to authorize means I can basically get your email from you and now I can spam you. And so I kind of have hope there that due to sales tactics, we might see less missing authorization.
I doubt it. That's a website. I think when you're building an app,
yeah,
if you just forget to do authentication. And here's the other thing. Like, you can build an app. You can have a URL buried 20 screens deep where you have to click a whole bunch of crap to get to it. And you just forgot to add authorization. Or you might have an API endpoint that you happen to forget to add the authorization check at the beginning of. Like, there's a lot of times this can just happen. Like, people make dumb mistakes all the time. Yeah. Like, it happens.
Well, anyway. Or you're integrating with something that doesn't support authorization. Like, I've done that, and it's like, well, I hope this works.
Yep, I've been there. All right, we have number 10, unrestricted upload a file with dangerous type.
Yeah, that one's, again, there are no, like, you only allow what you support properly, and you block everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say. People forget sometimes. It's,
if it I'm is, letting it you upload a PDF, it better end in .pdf, and file better say it's a PDF, or I'm bouncing it.
So the fun fact, checking, like, running the file command can also be dangerous.
Enough. Yeah.
It can be dangerous.
That's why you do it in a container and a blah, blah, blah.
Anyway. All right. We've got number 11, improper control of generation of code or code injection.
Yeah. Which is fancier input validation.
I feel like that's just cross-site scripting on the server. Like,
yes, it is. It's slightly fancier because it's Turing complete. So you have a lot more options to do shenanigans.
I mean, cross-site scripting is Turing complete. Like,
well, yeah, but I mean, it's simple. Whereas, like, the thing is with code injection, like, given a string, knowing whether or not it's dangerous, you also have to know the context. And that I think that's why code injection is a bit harder.
Funny you say that, because the next one, number 12, says improper input validation.
Good old CWE20. If you don't know what it is, give it CWE20. No, seriously, like, this is my complaint. Like, literally, you know, even the old timey MITRE people were like we had to have that, but it almost in a way was a mistake because it's like saying side effects may include dry mouth and nausea.
Right. Right.
Like, what am I talking about? I'm talking about everything, including
water is wet.
Spaghetti. Like, spaghetti can cause nausea if you eat too much of it.
Sounds like a challenge, Kurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, CW20 should exist.
Well, it should. Here's the thing. It should exist as a category holder, but you shouldn't be able to map to it. Because to me, if you're mapping to it, that's like saying something hurts. And your doctor's like, yeah, I'm going to need a little bit more than that.
I get it, though, because I remember when I used to assign CWEs to all the Elastic vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
There'd be times I'm looking and looking, I'm like, F it, it's 20. Yeah. I'm done.
Well, and that's the thing. Does it, like, if you have a patch, does it kind of sort of really matter that
it doesn't
much?
That's the thing. And after spending like an hour trying to obsess over which CWD to pick, I'm like, you know what, I'm done. It's 20. I'm finished now. What else do we have here? We've got 13 says command injection, which is similar to code injection.
Well, it's the same thing. One is the specific flavor of like apostrophes, semicolons, dollar signs, you know, special elements, right? And this one is especially a pain when you're trying to pass regex to a command line, because you can obviously generate a regex that essentially ends and then contains a command, and spotting and figuring that out is very tricky.
Sure.
And basically, again, if you're passing stuff directly to command line, you're doing it wrong.
All right, we've got improper authentication is 14. Yeah. Improper privilege management is 15. See, yeah. I feel like a bunch of these, we're starting to hit the point where we could be bucketing some of these together in a more reasonable way for sure, but whatever.
Basically, the vast majority of these boil down to input validation with sort of special rules. Like,
right.
A great example is the CSA has this really old web framework that's kind of provides a read-only website, and people kind of like keep trying to poke at it with cross-site scripting. And so to prevent that, because I don't want them complaining about cross-site scripting in this old site that I can't fix, I just block angle brackets from coming in.
Yeah.
So like, good luck doing your cross-site scripting without angle brackets. If you can do it, then I will actually take that bug report.
Right.
And I'll be interested. But, and then a lot of these are sort of logic / I forgot to do it bugs.
Sure. Sure.
You know?
All right. Let's keep going. We got,
Oh, and then memory management, of course, because you use C, and that was a problem. Right. Like, there's your problem.
Where did we stop? Privilege management? You're
at 14.
Did we do 14? 14, improper authentication. Improper privilege management is 15.
Yeah.
Deserialization of untrusted data is number 16.
Just more fancy input validation.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Don't deserialize data. Maybe that's the lesson.
Well, and also like when Python Pickle throws up a big red warning for 20 years.
I don't know why that is even still there. That thing should be gone.
Because it's actually really quite useful, because you can ship Python objects around. So it's like RPC calls. Boom. You can do some really clever magic with it.
It shouldn't be there. Okay. What else we have here? We've got...
So actually, no, pause. That actually leads to a good point, is like Python Pickle should actually probably be deprecated at this point. And like removed as like, here's a sharp edge. It used to be kind of useful, but there are better ways to do it now. And yeah, why doesn't Python 3 just say like, look, if you're using Pickle, come on, get with the 2020s.
They probably don't want to have the fight, Kurt. It's going to be a huge fight.
And I think that's part of the problem with a lot of this technology, is we have this like sedan, a four-door sedan full of like 7,000 pounds of random antique stuff.
Yes.
Because nobody wants to get rid of like the shoulder plane they bought at the antique market, because one day we might need that rusty shoulder plane.
I might need that cable I've been saving for 25 years and I don't remember what it goes to anymore.
Or it's for a standard that's been like outlawed in Europe.
Right. Okay. Anyway. What else we have here? The rest of the list is basically the same crap. I've got 21 is null pointer dereference.
Yeah.
Our old friend.
Fancy memory management.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I remember when null pointer dereference, we considered them crashes only.
Yeah.
And they tend to be, but every now and then someone tricks us and finds a way.
Well, figures out NOP sleds or return-oriented programming or all those other things that now have gigantic Wikipedia pages that didn't exist 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, most of it was what? Tavis and Solar and Jamie Zalewski.
Like, what's wild is I'm old enough to remember the time before XSS, like where we literally wrote CGI bin scripts in Bash shells and Perl.
I wrote them in C one time for a job.
Whoa, you were fancy.
I would not call it fancy.
Did you write it in C because you knew the compiled binary that would run setuid?
No. So I was working for a web hosting company.
Yeah.
Well, it was a web design company. They did some hosting, but mostly they worked with other people, and they wanted to use C because they could ship a binary and the client had no access to the source code. Perl would have been the other option, but Perl, you would have to give them the source code and then they could pay someone else to change it.
Remember there was that brief couple of years where there was like air quotes compilers for Perl, for PHP and all that junk, where you'd get like a binary blob out of it. So just for that, so you could like give it to a customer and they wouldn't be able to reverse engineer it. And that was terrible.
The obfuscation things. I mean, now though, it's funny because with things like tools like Ghidra, you can decompile C.
Yeah, like, in like 3 seconds.
Super easy.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was one other, what else? We did null pointer dereference, hard-coded credentials.
Yeah, that one's legit.
Hard-coded credentials? Yeah, people do that all the time. I get that.
Well, but here's the thing. At some point, you have the baby duck problem of you have this device, and especially with network hardware, that has to be like installed and turned on remotely, and you don't necessarily want to give the technician installing it like credentials to the thing, right? Because it's like a core network router, but you also don't want to send out your core network router engineer to like the middle of nowhere to install a POP in Kansas. And so that's actually, and you don't want to have to like bring the device in, kind of pre-configure it and then ship it back out. So it, this is actually a legitimately hard problem and something that the EU has, you know, passed some legislation on. And I honestly think one of the least worst solutions is that they essentially, you know, at the factory assign a unique password and literally put a sticker on the device with that password.
Well, yeah, no, that's, you know, easy to say. Something along those
lines is kind of the best solution.
I mean, at the same time, Kurt, I have checked passwords into Git before because I forgot to remove it from the config file or the code I was doing or whatever. Yeah. Like, it happens. I mean, this one I'm not, it's, I think there's different classifications of it. I think, yes, if you're a router manufacturer, you should have a random password per router. If you're a developer and you, oops, made a mistake, it happens. Like, that's just the way it is.
Well, and there's some good patterns. Like, you just, on first use, you ask for a new password and you force them to put a password in. You don't let them leave it blank. And then it's on them for putting in, like, donkey or password 123.
That too. Yep. Or just use single sign-on. Single sign-on. It works.
But you have to configure the single sign-on.
That's true. That's right?
Like, that's what I'm saying is this baby duck problem. At some point, you have to configure something for it to work.
Sure.
And for you to get in.
What else? So we've got integer overflow or wraparound.
So fancy memory management.
Memory management, basically. Yeah, that's true. Because when you use most of the, we'll say, safer languages, they don't let you overflow integers.
In what world do you add two positive numbers together and get a negative number?
Kurt, that's super useful in embedded programming. Sometimes you need that to happen. It's okay.
But this is a clever thing that the vast majority of people should not. Like, you can also carve with a chainsaw. That doesn't mean everybody should do it.
That's a good point. Good point.
Right?
All right. Well, and it's funny too, because actually I just wrote some code the other day. What was I building? Oh, right. So my kid is doing a research project where he needs some stepper motors to spin because he's got to do some, he's built 3D printing gears and testing them.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I've got some stepper motors. I've got a control board. I'll just write some code to make it spin. And obviously these things I'm going to flip when I'm doing time calculations, as well as just counting the number of steps the motor has taken, I'm probably going to overflow because this stuff's going to run for like weeks on end.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh crap, I have to like account for the integer overflow as part of this. Yeah. But I'm like, wait, no, I don't. Cause as long as I just keep adding a number, it will automatically overflow and I'm fine. And I don't have to think about it. So
it's just like your odometer rolling over.
Yeah. Same idea. Exactly the same thing. And so, but when you're doing embedded stuff, that matters because you've got like a 16-bit integer, you know, versus today where I have infinite integers in my, my CPU and my computer.
Well, and it might not even have an arithmetic unit.
No, it doesn't.
Although I would imagine they all do by now.
Well, I mean, whatever. I'm not, it's too complicated. This is an 80 mega 160, maybe. I forget what the board is.
Okay.
Anyway, doesn't matter. All right, we're almost done. We've got uncontrolled resource consumption. Sure, denial of service.
That's actually, that one's kind of interesting because it actually turns out it's really hard to put resource limits and rate limiting on a lot of things. Because conversely, if you dial it down too much, you denial of service yourself. Like my WordPress plugin actually has rate limiting by default, and I actually had to dial it a bit because when I was testing it, I kept running into it.
Sure.
And it was like, you've made too many requests, and I'm like, just do it. Like, I need to test you.
Right.
So that's something to keep in mind, is that resource consumption is hard because sometimes I literally am shouting at my computer, like, use more memory. I want you to run faster. Please stop being so conservative.
I mean, it does happen sometime. Okay, so the last one, and this is why I've been trying to race through this list before we run out of time. It says CWE 306, missing authentication for critical function.
Yeah, as opposed to just missing authentication for regular stuff.
I don't know. This one feels unnecessary to me.
Part of the history and background of CWE is there's a lot of bad CWEs. Like, there are some that are hyper-specific, like .NET, ASP, language-y, blah, 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 that wouldn't actually make it in the door through the current CWE requirements. And there's a bunch of, I'm going to say, sort of academic splits of CWEs where, like, missing authentication for a critical function. Yes, that's an interesting thing to have from, like, a data analysis perspective, but from sort of a day-to-day people who actually use this, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. All right. I think we've exhausted our time. We've exhausted the list. All right. I'm gonna end with my hot take. Top 25 lists, it's probably only useful to get clicks. That's it.
Well, and I would argue that, like, that's like CWE is useful for getting some attention and getting some eyeballs and awareness.
I'm not saying CWE is not useful. I'm saying a top 25 list is.
But these top X lists actually, how do I put this nicely?
They get clicks.
No manager will ever look at CWE, but they might, God forbid, spend 5 minutes looking at a top 10 list and then have a, but then the best part is they're going to have a whole bunch of micromanage-y type concerns and like, where do we stand on XSS? You know? Maybe.
Anyway, clicks for the clicks. I mean, I guess it worked. We just spent, what, 20, 35 minutes talking about it. All right. Anyway, I'm calling this. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you for listening. Go to berserksecuritypodcast.com. Hit up the show notes. Easy Pondo says podcast hashtag on social media. Well, Mastodon specifically.
Yeah.
Oh, I do have a Blue Sky account now.
Okay. So should I get one or is it like, what is...
There's a lot of people. There's a lot of video game people there I used to like to follow on the Hell site. So I was kind of glad to follow them there. But I'm definitely not... I wouldn't say I'm like particularly active. Anyway. Yeah. All right, Kurt. Have a marvelous rest of your day.
You too. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.